Welcome to the Space Show, Rolf.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be talking to you today.
The Canadians have got a very exciting satellite up at the moment. It's called RADARSAT, as you'd well know. And what is it?
Well, RADARSAT is Canada's first Earth observation satellite. It's the result of a collaborative venture between Canada and the United States. NASA, NOAA launched the satellite on our behalf and in return received data. And we've also performed the mapping of Antarctica for them. But we make the data available to the Canadian science community, in fact, to the world science community, and it's available on a commercial basis as well. There's a company called RADARSAT International who've been given the responsibility of commercializing the data, selling what they can, and returning some royalties to the Canadian government on the data that they sell. We also have taken a lot of data around the world. We've mapped the entire landmass in the Scansar-wide, one particular wide beam mode, and we're mapping the world again in different beam modes to provide an archive of data which scientists or commercial users can access at will.
RADARSAT, of course, is not the first radar satellite. There was one Americans, the United States put up called CSAT, but that failed. But your one is going well, is it?
Yes, this is Canada's first Earth observation satellite. It's going very well. It has met all of the technical specifications drawn up before the satellite was launched. We were expecting there to be some wear and tear on certain elements, such as the tape recorders, which are typically a weak link on board, and they've performed flawlessly. We're very happy with the behavior of the satellite and with its impending longevity. It's a very versatile satellite. It has 32 different beam modes. We've found out that the users require some modes more than others, and in fact, we've changed the beam modes in the first 2 years of operation, adding some new ones which are more in demand and deleting other ones for which there's little demand. We've also put in new software to control the attitude of the satellite, and this has resulted in improved behavior on the part of the satellite and increased the reliability of its operation.
Attitude, of course, being the way that the direction in which the spacecraft points.
That's correct. This is not a societal attitude or a chip-on-the-shoulder attitude. This is the pointing of the satellite, controlling its orientation in space so that the beam coming from the satellite toward the Earth covers the intended areas on the Earth. So we have a control station governing the satellite located near Montreal at Saint-Hubert, the Canadian Space Agency headquarters, and we can send data down to stations in Canada, in the States, or any of a growing list of network stations around the world. And in fact, recently we've been sending data to Alice Springs, and that station is one of the certified network stations operating with RADARSAT system now.
So anyone who wants to use RADARSAT data in Australia can contact the Australian Centre for Remote Sensing?
Well, in fact, commercial users would probably be better off to go directly to RADARSAT International in Vancouver, and they can buy the data that they want. But they can get as much data as they want at a reasonable price, either data that's ordered specially on their behalf or data that is pulled out of archives.
And what purpose do people use the data for?
Well, this satellite was originally conceived to monitor ice and to distinguish between ice, fresh ice and hard multi-year ice, and water, but it turns out to have a number of applications in forestry, in agriculture, in monitoring rice paddies and the maturity of the crop. We can do ship reconnaissance and surveillance to detect foreign fishing vessels in native waters. We can detect oil spills, whether they're naturally occurring as seeps from underneath the seabed or spills from ships that have foundered and broken. It's a very useful tool for disaster mitigation. It has a number of applications which are still only now unfolding and becoming more obvious.
What are some of these?
Well, the applications are unfolding, such as forestry or different aspects of agriculture. RADARSAT has an unusual versatility with the different beams, the 32 different beams. We can change the swath width and the resolution that the beam offers, and also the angle of incidence. So the angle of incidence, which is the angle that the beam hits the Earth at, can vary between 10 degrees and 60 degrees, and there are some features that leap out at you at one particular angle of incidence than another. So we're still in the process of learning which angles of incidence pull out certain phenomena most notably. But with geology, for example, we've been able to do some mapping and to identify certain features which may help one find ore-bearing formations.
I believe that the radar sat can actually look through the leaf canopy of a forest and see some of the state of the vegetation underneath it.
To a certain extent, this is true. We find that with rainforest, where there's a heavy canopy at the top, that is somewhat impervious to the radar signal. The radar signal is quite responsive to moisture and humidity, and if there's a burned cover or canopy, then the signal will tend to go through that and hit the ground. If there's a heavy rainforest, then it'll see the top of the rainforest. But we have noticed some other features, such as looking down through the sands of the desert. We've noticed areas that had nothing unusual to the naked eye or to an optical sensor, but due to the dryness of the sand and the radar's ability to penetrate dry material until it hit some moisture-bearing layer, one was able to detect hidden dry wadis that had been covered over by the sands and indicating water beds or courses meters below the surface of the sand. Also, when we covered Antarctica, we discovered landing strips that had been buried by snow and ice. There were some 10 meters down. People had forgotten they were there. They certainly weren't visible to the naked eye, but yet on the radar image they showed up, and initially people wondered what was, if that was an artifact, a false reading, or then they realized that there had been a landing strip which hadn't been used for some decade or 15 years. It had been snowed over and covered over, but the radar picked it out, as well as the ruins of the original research station located right at the South Pole. So we have a system which seems to be working very well technically. The science community is delighted with the data that is now available, and we're working to improve the speed of delivery for commercial users, and in some cases the users are able to get their data within an hour and a half of the data having been taken by the satellite, processed, presented in a usable format and delivered to their doorstep, either by landlines or by a modem or by now direct PC. We're actually trying to get data to some users via communication satellite to speed up the delivery process.
I believe that a typical radar sat image is actually quite a large amount of data in terms of megabytes or gigabytes.
Yes, that's correct. You're well informed. The typical image is pretty large, and in some cases users will be quite content with a subset or a compressed data instance where there's reduced clarity or resolution, or one can crop the image simply to send out the bits that are required. But it's true that there's a lot of data to transmit for a full image at a full resolution.
So it wouldn't be viable to send a full image out over the internet?
It is possible, but it takes hours and hours. And if there's an interruption and you lose it and have to start again, it can be quite frustrating. But nonetheless, we do make images available at our RadarSat website, and you can get a pretty good idea of the type of image which can be called up in full resolution if you so desire.
One of the indicators of global warming you'd expect would be the changes in the amount of sea ice around around Canada, for example, or around the Antarctic. Are you looking for those sorts of changes?
Yes. We are, at least I am, fundamentally an operator of the satellite, not a processor of its data, but we are making the data available. And certainly the extent of total extent of ice covering Antarctica is one parameter which is important. Also, there are some small islands which have volcanic eruptions through the sea. They're covered with glaciers, and some of these small islands have a greater proportional change in the ice extent as a result of a small change in Earth temperature than the large masses such as Antarctica. So some of these are very good indicators as to new trends and changes happening in the global warming domain.
How much longer can you expect this satellite to be operating? And do you have any plans to follow it up with either better ones or simply a replacement of it?
Yes. This satellite is lasting very well. It was designed initially to have a 5 or 6 year lifetime. All indications are that, barring some unusual phenomenon, it'll last longer still than that. But plans are already quite mature for a second satellite called RADARSAT-2, which will have all of the features of RADARSAT-1, plus some additional polarization diversity and improved resolution. It'll get down to 3 meters. It'll have vertical and horizontal polarization and cross-polarization, and should be able to detect even more features and quantities than we are able to do with RADARSAT-1.
Well, thank you, Rolf, for joining us on the Space Show, and I hope that this satellite continues to operate well and that the new one does equally as well.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure to talk to you this afternoon, and I wish you and your listeners the best of luck, and I'm grateful for your interest in RADARSAT. Good day.